This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are sitting here with Jesse and Ann Lee of the East Side Food Festival. Welcome to the Tunes.
Hello.
Ann Lee, we've known each other for a long time.
Very long. I would say
10 years?
Maybe 15.
Maybe 15 years. Oh yeah, yes. we go way back.
Way back.
When Greg and I used to come out to LA, we would stay with Ann and also DJ at Shortstop.
Yeah.
Shout out.
Awesome town.
And Jesse, we're
Fast friends.
But we're here today to talk about a little bit of your involvement in supporting the LA scene on the East Side, and then also the Amazing Food Festival, which is now in its fourth year.
Fourth annual.
Which is awesome.
That is awesome. I'm pretty stoked on that.
So let's dial it back a little bit. And you are a professionally trained chef.
I am, yes. I went to culinary school.
How was that?
I mean, it was great. I actually moved to New York for a while, and I went to a health-supported culinary school. I moved back to LA and, you know, cooked in kitchens and ran a catering business for 5 or 6 years, and yeah.
And what made you fall in love with it? I mean, you know, you did music, you did DJ nights, you did a whole lot of other creative endeavors. What drew you to food?
Well, I think that I feel like it's almost a common thing in music or you know, related industries when you're kind of looking to get out of it.
Yeah.
Get out of the events, the event production world, or, you know, nightlife world, I guess is what I was in prior. And
it's a real beast, that night. Gets you every time. You know what? You're like, oh, that event, yeah, let's get into it. That sounds great. And then you're like, I hate this. I hate everyone. I would go home.
Just have this conversation.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so it just sort of seemed like, you know, something, a different path to take at the time. And I had a passion for food and cooking, and kind of just went with it.
Now, Jesse, you have a... You're very modest about it, but you have
a large hunger.
A large hunger for food.
Yeah.
And also a big producer in the music world as well.
I guess we've all been, you know, for better or for worse, involved in the music business, either tangentially or a little bit deeper.
It's a fun ride in your 20s.
Exactly.
It's like so much fun.
Exactly.
So much fun.
That's actually why.
It's a blast.
Exactly. It was a beautiful thing, and I was lucky enough to do it. We were all lucky enough to do it. I was sort of involved in different areas of the music business from the label side, and then and like licensing and music business side, and then more I guess more intensely on the production side.
Yeah, I mean, who are some of the artists that you worked with?
Well, Sam Sparrow was the first one that I had success with the song Black and Gold, which ended up getting assigned to a major label and taking us around the world. And then I've produced a bunch of other stuff, but then most recently Banks. And all her stuff.
Three-run night at the A, sold out.
Yeah, last night was the last night.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
That's awesome. And you also are the founder of Max Hennett Studios.
I am. That was sort of my way to get out of the music business, which ended up kind of not working out.
Yeah, I don't think you get out by building a gorgeous event space on the East Side.
Well, at least I don't have to deal with labels as much anymore.
No, you just pass them off to your coordinator. You're exactly. Like, here you go with this. For those who are unfamiliar with Max Sennett, quick history.
Yeah, Max Sennett Studios is a 101-year-old soundstage in Silver Lake, built by Max Sennett, who's the gentleman that put Charlie Chaplin and all those kinds of folks.
Watch for him. Movies. Up and coming.
Yeah, he's still
hot actor.
Still got it.
Old Charlie.
Old Charlie.
Yeah, so I bought it about 5 years ago. And brought it back to life, and since then we've done an endless amount of shoots and events.
Yeah.
On the shoot side, you know, commercials, music videos, films, and whatnot. And then on the event side, of course, the East Side Food Festival, and movie screenings and live shows with Interpol and Flying Lotus and Chromeo and whatnot. And then we have a music production school in there as well, which is awesome, Point Blank, and our own production company for all our content.
It's amazing. So I guess to both of you, what made it so important for you to start a food festival on the East Side, but then also create a huge event space on the East Side where... It's fine. So for both of you, being on the East Side is a big part of what you do, obviously, being the East Side Food Festival, but at Max Sennett's location. Why was it important for you to open up in a part of town that was not normally known for these types of event spaces or events?
Well, I think the location kind of came just through the fact that we're friends and I have the space and we wanted to do something in food together. But as Max Sennett Studios, the whole point of me bringing it back to life was to give this East Side, East LA, or the East Side of LA.
Sure.
Not East LA, obviously.
Yeah.
The East Side of LA and Los Angeles in general, a home for this creative renaissance. And that includes all kinds of different creative endeavors, including food.
Yeah.
So then, you know, Anne and I are good friends, and we kind of decided to band together on this.
Yeah. For me, it was, I mean, at that time, I was, you know, working really hard with doing food. And I had been involved with a couple of different food events, and then, of course, I had been to quite a few food festivals. And there's a million food festivals out there. At the time, there was still, you know, quite a few. And I just found that a lot of them, you know, the restaurants that were featured and stuff like that, it's always going to be, they're always on the west side, the ones that are a little bit well-known.
Yeah.
They already are well-known, and they're getting like all the love, basically. And I just found that the food scene in the east side of LA is just like blown up. It's just like booming right now. And at that time it was really growing and it was really exciting, and I just felt like no one was focusing or giving or shooting or, you know, featuring these awesome East Side spots. And to me it just made sense to sort of give those lesser known or lesser highlighted restaurants, you know, a little bit of the spotlight and really, like, you know, let the East Side shine.
So, I mean, when you started approaching restaurants for the first year, what was the initial response?
They were excited about it because a lot of them had never been asked to be in a food festival before.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing is, and what it was at that time is that, you know, these smaller restaurants on the east side that had never been asked to be in a food festival, and most of them were excited about the idea. And now what it has become, you know, since then, is that it's really become a community event for the restaurants and for the vendors. The vendors love it because it is about the community, and then on the east side, about that, you know, the relationships between the restaurants grow and they become, you know, they hang out together. They like to come together and you know, it's part of like their sort of culture, I guess.
So, you have the idea, you have the space, you have people who are excited, but how do you really launch a festival?
With a blackout, with a power outage.
Oh, that's right.
That's how you do that.
That's right. Yeah. So first year, what happened?
How you do that. So yes, the first year, the way in which you do that is a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and a lot of work, first of all. But yeah, the first year, of course, you know, we hope everything's going to go off without a hitch, but there was a freak power outage
in the whole
neighborhood. But it was perfect weather outside. It wasn't raining, wasn't windy, and no one could tell why, so no one understood why the power was out. Yeah. Like, everyone was just angry.
And they were blaming me as the studio.
The studio.
Like, if it's raining and lightning, people go like, oh, it's an act of power. Right, but
it was some underground power cell that had, like, blown up. It was a totally freak accident in the whole neighborhood, but everyone thought it was like the studio didn't have power only.
Anyway, we made it happen. We got two generators in on a Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
We were a little delayed, but
We opened doors about an hour and a half late.
Yeah.
And everyone had a good time, right?
Yeah.
Everyone had a great time once they were inside. Not so much outside waiting,
And then also, the good news is, since then, nothing bad has happened.
Knock on wood, right?
We got it out of the way, I think, hopefully.
So, after the first year, you know, you do the first one. How soon after doing the first one did you realize, like, that you had something special in your hand, you wanted to keep it going?
Pretty much immediately.
Yeah, the day of. Like, once...
once those generators plug in.
Yeah, sure. Sure, it's like, wait, this is, like, a real thing now.
Yeah.
And everybody's having a great time. And even if we can weather that, and it's still a great thing, then... That's a good look.
Irony actually with the power outage is that it actually made it better for the vendors, because they were sitting around for an hour where they were ready to serve food, but they couldn't serve food, and so they just hung out and drank beer and had fun for an hour, and they got to know each other, and that actually, ironically, is what created this sort of, like, community vibe I'm talking about with the vendors, is that this blackout kind of, like, facilitated that. That's hilarious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a lot of vendors, like, people love those types of festivals, especially when they can just, like, meet people, crack some beers, hang out, get to meet their neighbors. So we're gonna take a quick musical break, and then when we come back, we're gonna talk about this year's festival, what to expect, and all the delicious treats and fun eats that you can have. We have a song coming up from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Jesse and Ann Lee.
Hello.
Of Eastside Food Festival. Fourth year kicking off. It's going to be next week.
October 22nd.
No, not next week.
I'm going to start that over.
Okay.
Right.
Wait, when is this going to be out?
This is coming out next Sunday, so 2 weeks.
Okay,
2 weeks. Okay. Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Jesse and Ann Lee of Eastside Food Festival. We are 2 weeks out from the festival.
Yep. October 22nd.
How do you feel? I feel like 2 weeks out is the like, okay, it's here.
Yeah.
I wish you have a checklist, but it's exciting. Yeah. But you're just like, oh crap, we have a lot to do.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, most of the work is done at this point. Most of it.
Yeah.
Ideally.
And then from on the studio side, we've done these obviously, three times now.
Yeah.
But we also do all kinds of other sort of similar things. We do, in terms of like the production, the layout, we do the Echo Park Craft Fair and whatnot, which is inside and outside too.
So and the beer festival.
Yeah, all that stuff. So we're quite
deft.
Yeah, deft.
Yeah, that's a good word, right?
Thank you.
I'll give you a word. So obviously, 4 years, people know about it. I've seen billboards in the past, but how do you get the word out? How do you get people excited, or has it just become something where people are like, I know it's coming?
It's definitely people, the awareness is, raised, and people definitely know it's coming. But I mean, we're always trying to get the word out to new people. We work with a lot of great media partners to help spread the word.
Yeah.
Just,
it's funny, this year I've actually noticed, I feel like it's sort of like a tipping point or whatever, where now this is the first year that I've been asked consistently about when the food fest is happening.
That's awesome.
And whatever, yeah.
People look forward to it, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really great when people, it's so easy for people to sort of like knock on things and then to see that flip when they're like, oh, this is something real, I'm actually excited about it. Like, I'm really looking forward to it. Like, I've definitely seen people text me, been like, oh, Eastside Food Festival, like, are we going to go do this?
And yeah.
Like, absolutely, we're going to do this.
We've been getting some nice love, too, in the press.
I mean, it's good. A lot of these food festivals now, not this one, are sort of, you can sort of know the lineup before they even come out. And this is very much like a love letter to the community.
Yeah. And we also we definitely, one of our goals every year, I mean, we welcome back our, return vendors, obviously, because they're really important to us, but we also reach out to anyone who's, a new restaurant or a new business that we, one of our sort of like goals is to feature these like brand new places that they can get a little, so people in the neighborhood or not can, can come and try the restaurant for the first time in one place. So
yeah, I've always found that the way to really survive as a restaurant beyond the initial hype, which is so much a part of like the media, cycle now, where it's like, this is new, and then 2 weeks later, we're not going to talk about you talking to them.
Yeah.
To be in a community and neighborhood restaurant. And the fact that you guys support that and build the whole festival about like creating like neighborhood restaurants is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, well, the good news is too, now it's not just like neighborhood restaurants. It just happens that the restaurants in our neighborhood happen to be world-class restaurants.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about who's coming this year. Let's talk about who people can expect to get a little nibble from.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we have, from our return vendor list, we have Jenny's Ice Cream. Everybody
loves Jenny.
That.
She's great.
She's great. Twa Familia's back. They were with us last year as well.
Just ate there yesterday. Oh, baby.
And then we have, new ones like Cafe Birdie from Highland Park, which is like one of Highland Park's sort of really great new spots. Also their neighbor RBTA, which is also a new spot literally right next door to Cafe Birdie from Highland Park, is going to be there. Zach Pollock from Alimento's Casa Buona, which is like his new Italian joint, is going to be there.
Solid pizza. Yeah. And those mozzarella, are they going to do the mozzarella? Are they going to do mozzarella sticks?
I actually don't know what
those things
are.
We'll put a request in an official.
Oh yeah, yeah. Hey, listen. Sorry guys, I don't know what your plan
it's
was.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a great lineup, but Sawyer and Kettle Black from just down the street. Mm.
Were great last year.
Yeah.
Yes, they did.
If you haven't had that roast chicken from them, baby, that chicken is deadly.
See, this is me, by the way. I'm just like the food lover. I don't even, I love cooking, but I'm not a good chef, but I'm like the guy who like grunts and moans.
No.
And kind of stuff.
Yes, I have seen.
We're just gonna, the rest of this segment is just Anne reading off chef, and you and I going like, oh my God, that sounds so good.
Yeah.
And so who are some of the new people, and have people Are you now at the point where, like, restaurants are reaching out to you to be like, hey, we're new, we want to come do this?
For sure, definitely. But, I mean, some, I feel like some of them, like I said earlier, a lot of these restaurants don't actually get asked to do food festivals normally, so it's not in their sort of scope.
Yeah.
And so we do have to do the reaching out to them. And most of the time, they're just really excited, like, you know, because they may not have been asked before, and it's kind of it goes both ways. We get requests, incoming requests all the time, and then we also do a lot of outreach as well. So just depends.
And beyond the food, you are also having entertainment as well. It's an actual festival because it goes beyond just
I mean just
like going there and stuffing your face, which is what I will be doing.
Yeah,
but,
of course. I mean, that's the primary goal. But I mean, Jesse and I, like I said, are both sort of from a music background,
sure,
and music and events background. So we always like to have, you know, live music elements. Dub Lab Radio is actually curating the DJs this year.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Snacky Tunes will be there with,
we will.
You know, you guys are having,
we're having Tangerine Play and Home State, and we're doing a panel on
cheese.
No, we're doing a panel on what it means to be working with your sibling.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I just started working with my sibling, and it's a glorious adventure.
It's a glorious thing. It's, and when you're not celebrating that we did this to the family, you're probably throwing like helmet makers in your face.
Yeah.
No, there might be a fist, I don't know, maybe there's a fist fight. Maybe there's stuff in the panel where it's they pull stuff out from, like,
sick.
Remember when you were six?
Yeah, that's an entertainment.
Oh yeah.
quality entertainment.
Quality entertainment. And then you're also doing some stuff with edibles.
Yes.
A lot of stuff.
Cannabis Corner this year, which is a whole new world here in California. So, we have a Cannabis Corner, which is a section of the food vendors where we have three culinary cannabis, you know, cannabis-infused food. And it's actually food. It's not just like, you know, you go to the, it's not like just candy. They're actually chefs cooking food with cannabis, they make a watermelon gazpacho and stuff like that. So
interesting.
And then we have a cannabis cooking 101 food demonstration, where you can actually sit and watch and learn the techniques to infuse your own food with cannabis products. So
you're gonna want to do that.
You can probably stop there. You eat, get full, go to Cannabis Corner,
yeah,
make another lap, right?
Rinse and repeat. Keep it going.
And drinks, what's going to be on tap?
So we have so many good drinks today. Actually, we have some great partnerships happening. Winsome Restaurant is actually running the bar for Ventura Spirits, which they're doing, I think, a gin. Wilder Gin is called.
You want to talk about a fight on a Sunday.
Wilder Gin.
Go talk to my sibling about
more bros
working together and have some gin.
Bar Angelus is curating a cocktail for Amaro Angelino, which is another local brand.
Mm.
The new bar and restaurant, Tabula Rasa Bar, is actually, they're going to curate the wine. So it's going to be a really great selection of wine from them. We have Angel City Brewery coming with a beer. Again,
love
it's all
them.
Local, really great local brands on the drinking side, and it's going to be a really good selection. Our Los Angeles Vodka is coming again.
I love those people.
Yeah.
And they're cool because they do our fill-in-the-blank of the city, right?
Yeah, they have different, when I was in Berlin, there's our Berlin, there's our Amsterdam, this is our Los Angeles, it's our
good
version
people.
Of the our.
It's such a cool con. It's
vodka.
So cool.
Yeah.
I remember, found them. I discovered them at Eastside Food Festival.
Oh,
it's like when Ludacris was talking about all the different area codes. So you can go to any city and be like on top of the world.
Yeah, it's like I'm not cheating on my favorite brand because I have this brand right here.
It says your city.
It says my city right here.
Yeah.
It's so smart. It's so smart. So, you know, as you enter your fourth year and you know you look to the future, you know, what do you hope to see in the next couple of years? What do you want people to take away from this festival?
I mean, I just hope that they have fun. That's first. Have fun, get full, and then I really hope that they go to the restaurants and support the restaurants ongoingly, because in the end, for the restaurants, that is the goal, and we are doing it in support of them, and if they don't, you know, we want them to, you know, hopefully this gets people's butts and seats in restaurants and in the East Side, so that's kind of the goal.
Yeah, forks to mouths.
Yeah, forks to mouths.
Did you just come up with that?
Yeah.
So just, man.
Damn.
Just firing all cylinders.
He's on fire. Yeah.
You're the one who said deaf, so I'm going to give you that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if people want to come, where can they get tickets? Where can they go? Where can they follow all information?
Yeah, sure. EastsideFoodFest.com is the website. Ticket link is on there. All the info. There's a lot more programming and on vendors that we haven't mentioned, and so all that info will be there. Tickets, through Eventbrite if you ever want to go there.
Yeah.
The link will be in the website. Sign up for our mailing list on the website. All sorts of stuff.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm excited.
Yeah, can't wait.
I'm going to start my diet now so I can just be full of gin and. Gin and good bites.
That's
gin
and bites.
Gin and bites. We have another song from the archives on Snacky Tunes, then a live band in house coming up after the break on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey. Yeah, what's up? I was just wondering, could you come? Yeah, to turn off the reverb. Okay, here we go.
Do anything that you can do, bitch, cause you use some words just cause they sound. bomb that make you feel tough and shit, but you would never do this. Yo, yeah, come on. Yeah, the radio, radio. Yeah, yeah. Internet radio. Internet radio, radio, internet radio. What you gonna
You wanna take anything, you don't know why, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Welcome back. We have Elijah in studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having us.
Do you want to introduce the band since they are going to sit here and be silent observers?
Absolutely. Right here on Lap Steel. This is Lewis Cohen. He plays lap steel and guitar. It's Dylan Debiase on the bass right there. That's Stu Pender all the way next to you on the guitar.
Hey guys. I think this is like the second time we've had steel guitar in here. So I'm very excited. I love the sound of it. I don't know why I don't book more of them. It's such like a nice Sunday afternoon sound.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. Yeah. I literally was recording this new record and I think I had him do like one song on the record and literally like, I don't know, I think I texted you like a week later and I was like, dude, can you actually just record on every single song?
Yeah, it's just like, I feel like today is not an indication, but as we maybe ease into fall at some point in the near future, like a steel guitar Sunday just sounds like a really nice, like kind of like a fire, some whiskey.
Yeah.
You know.
Sounds like a Spotify playlist right there.
Oh. Okay, after this, we're going to cancel the rest of our evening plans and make our steel pedal playlist.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Woodstock.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like one of those things you kind of got to thank your parents for because you could grow up in any town, but you grew up in a town that has such a rich musical history. And you had some pretty amazing moments growing up there with some of the studios that are up there.
It's true, yeah. It's true. I mean, I got to learn a bit from Levon Helm up in his studio. And
man.
Yeah, it's cool. I remember there's a studio right next to my dad's house, Dreamland. And at one point, Fleet Foxes were recording Helplessness Blues there. And every night when I'd go to bed, I'd hear them recording it. It was so cool. It's Woodstock.
And what was it like being there with Levon Helms up there? I mean, did you learn from him? Did you get to, any education? Did you kind of sit outside and be like, hey, mister, show me some chords?
You know, he's the kind of guy who would just kind of come up to me. I'd be sweeping the floors. You know, I did lights a little bit, which was, I have no experience doing light, so I don't know why
in
I did
the,
them.
Wait, you did lights in the studio or just...
So they have the Ramble every Saturday, so right. They put on live shows. Yeah, and he's the kind of guy who would just come up to you. He'd see you do something as small as sweep the floors, and he'd say, like, hey, what's up, man? How are you doing? And, you know...
He's like, don't hold the broom like that. Hold it like
this. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, he's a cool guy. I got a lot of experience with him before he passed.
And what are some of the things that... I mean, you know, there's... When people are early in their career, it's obviously going to be different type of advice than, you know, later in their career. What was some of the more broad stroke advice that he gave you when you were starting out that, you know, just seemed kind of simple but really held a lot of sway as you began to pick up your chops?
Yeah, well, you know, he's talking about Levon specifically. Yeah. Levon actually gave me one piece of advice that it's a little vulgar, so I can't actually say it.
You can say it.
Well, it's okay, but I'll give you the idea of it, which is basically right before I was going to music school, which is where I met a lot of these guys. You know, he basically told me to always choose music, no matter what.
Okay.
When you're on the road, when things get rough, if you're, you know, whatever, no matter where you are in life, just like as long as it's your passion, just stay focused
as opposed to anything else, fill in the blanks.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. And you went to Music Conservatory Purchase.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And you also had incredible, Mitski was with you and a few other people, which is also, who is amazing and incredible. One of the best live performance.
Yeah, our drummer, who's not here actually, he's not feeling well today, unfortunately, but he is her drummer as well. So there's a lot of crossover. We're really good friends, and Mitski's awesome. I love her.
And what were some of the things that you picked up or began to refine once you got to school versus, you know, your kind of early days floor sweeping education?
That's a tricky one. I don't know. I'm not sure.
fair enough. Yeah. And what were some of the things that, like, that you, when you were leaving school, that you took with you as you went into writing your first EP?
A lot of different music tools, first and foremost, but also directly after graduating, which was a really funny experience. Stu and I went out on like a really crazy tour with the Gypsy Kings. So basically right after we got home from touring with the Gypsy Kings, which was really a funny pair, I wrote that first EP.
And what was it like being, and how old were you when you went on the, and how did that come about?
Yeah, we had a manager at the time who was also their manager.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't as crazy as it sounds, but it was really funny. I mean, there wasn't like, you know, we don't speak the same language, but we somehow got along with them. We played soccer with them before the shows, and we played in, you know, crazy theaters, which was just like the people were coming to dance to Bombalaya, not seeing like an indie rock band from Brooklyn. But it somehow worked out. It was cool.
And again, like another amazing experience. Early in your career, what did you, even though you didn't speak the same language, like what did you take for them, or what were some of the things that you learned from performing alongside them and watching them play every night?
Well, those guys are incredible guitarists. So I think Stu, really, I remember at one point you were actually like hanging out with them, practicing different things, right?
They showed me some stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like trying to keep up.
Yeah, you know, so they were really cool guys, and they're also like, there was this sense of like, there was no real conversation. It was just like every time we saw each other, there was just this like excitement. It's just like, you're here, I'm here, yeah, you know, let's play soccer, let's play a set. They would come up and play some songs with us, and there was just this excitement that was just like, it's so cool. I learned a lot from that, just on like a human level.
Right. I mean, once you strip away language, I mean, it's kind of a cliche to say that like music is a universal language.
Yeah.
But when you hear those stories, like music is a universal language.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, it's true. It's very true.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you guys going to play for us first?
This is Everything I Know, and actually I wrote it while on tour with the Gypsy Kings after they taught me a song of theirs, and I used just this one chord, which is what stemmed from it.
Perfect. Well, here we go live on Snacky Tunes.
One, two, one. I waited for the night. Everything I know and everyone I love will go. Now I'm just watching your mind. Yeah, I'm just watching your mind fade away so quickly. It shouldn't be nothing, but now just as the day somewhere in my mind grows an empty place I call home for you to come on home. But you're already gone.
I waited for the night time. I waited for the right time. I waited for your right side, but you're already gone. You're already gone. I'm just waiting here. Yeah, I'm just waiting here. Because everything I know and everyone I love will go.
You mentioned working on your first EP after touring with Gypsy Kings. Mm-hmm. What was the process in writing that, and how did you begin to pull together your first musical output?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a lot different from the record that, you know, I just finished. Just in that I had just moved from Brooklyn from graduating at the conservatory, and I was a little bit more inspired by, you know, the Gypsy Kings taught us about, I spent actually some time in France with them, in Montpellier in the south of France, and I was in the studio with a couple of them, and, you know, they would teach me as best as they could, you know, without speaking the same language, taught me a little bit about, like, traditional styles of dance music. So I got back and I was a little bit more inspired by sort of like something a little bit more upbeat, a little more, you know, dancey, I guess you could say. So I kind of combined like the first couple songs on the EP were sort of taken from that excitement, that energy. And the last two songs sort of came more from my folk background, my sort of country folk background of growing up in the Catskill Mountains where, you know, most people play acoustic guitar. But yeah, I just sort of tried to combine them a little bit.
And I'm curious about the way that they taught you without any of the language, you know, did they just show you songs or did they show you methods or how to like...
Yeah, I think Stu can speak to this one.
These guys were like the, I don't know, just like such high energy. They'd kind of like be running around smiling all the time.
Yeah.
There would be a guitar in someone's hand and they'd just kind of, we would just like play, kind of like play songs back and forth at each other, and
yeah, totally. Yeah, I remember.
Didn't do much talking. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I remember. I think a good example of that is right before we played the Beacon Theater, we were just in our dressing room, sort of rehearsing. We were playing "I'm on Fire" by Bruce Springsteen with the Gypsy Kings. You know, they came up and they played it with us. I should also note that most of the Gypsy Kings are our age. It's like two main old guys and then their sons.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, I should mention that.
They've swapped out some of the older members.
Yeah, yeah. Those guys are like in their 20s.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
It's not like we're hanging out with a bunch of, you know, which would have been cool too. And those guys are great as well.
But. I really appreciate the clarification because in my mind, up until you said that, I was like, it's you guys and a bunch of 60-year-olds.
I know, yeah.
And it's like Bumbleleo.
Yeah.
And they've got like a tie that's almost always untied.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, okay.
Exactly.
So the Gypsy Princes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I remember though we were in our dressing room and we were just playing like we're just rehearsing it. And it's just, you know, it starts with that just E major. And I remember I don't remember what he showed us, but one of the Gypsy Kings in, you know, in his broken English was like, "Oh, try this." And just played like a really beautiful inversion of the chord that I don't remember what it was, but he showed us and it was really cool. It was those moments, you know, it was those moments where they just show us things. They'd like, you know, they'd say, "Oh, try to play it this way." And I don't remember any of it, but it was awesome.
And then the Beacon Theater show was kind of like the culmination of all the, kind of all roads led to that, right? It was a huge...
It was crazy, yeah.
So the first EP came out and you got a couple song placements on there and it kind of took you guys on to the next leg of the career.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, a lot of placements came before that, which is sort of what led to the Gypsy King story a little bit. And then that one was sort of, yeah, we got a couple placements, which was fun. And that sort of led to... You know, after that, I was like, I need to make an album. I need to sort of put the EP aside and just make an album. There's a lot of throwing things away and re-recording and rewriting and going back and forth. And yeah.
We're going to talk about it in a second, but let's hear another song.
Cool.
What are you going to play for us now?
It's another song off that EP. This is called Wild Child.
Here we go, live on Snacky Tunes.
Brown eyes forget that I called. Ooh. Ooh. Best friend, love of mine, please wait this time. I feel so damn scared. How did I get here? Well, my love, are you scared? Are you scared? Will I try? Do you care? Do you care? Am I the wild child in disguise again? Oh, my love, don't let me in.
Talk about recording stuff, throwing away, recording stuff, throwing away, recording stuff, throwing away. This new debut record is self-produced, self-engineered, solo vibes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you figure out what works and what doesn't work when it's just you in a room in your own head?
I think you have a little bit more of room to grow. I mean, it's always great to have people there to collaborate with and to, which is what I did, you know, with the other musicians who played on it. But it's difficult. Also, you know, like Lewis here played lap steel on the whole record, but I didn't really give you much direction. I just kind of showed you a song and said play lap steel on it. So for that, you know, I have ideas in my head, but I need collaborators. But to answer your question. You know, being in a room alone with nothing but your laptop open and your DAW and whatever and your instruments next to you, there's a lot of chance to try things, see what works, see what doesn't work. I went through like maybe 6 versions of all of these songs, you know, and then pretty much ended up with like acoustic guitar and lap steel. You know, it was like before that they were like electronic dance songs or something. And then I realized, well, wait a second, I want to make like, you know, something a little bit more true to myself.
And a lot of the creative process, especially when bringing collaborators, is giving them space to be who they are.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just trying to like make them your instrument, which never really works, or it's like lowest common denominator creative process.
Yeah, totally.
So it's interesting to hear that you did this with the Lab Steel, but it's also interesting, like, when was the kind of breaking point that you realized that you wanted to get back to yourself, you know, that you got out of the dance music, mm-hmm. got out of Brooklyn,
yeah.
washed yourself of the Gypsy Kings? Like, what was what was the turning point?
That's a really good question, actually, and I've thought about it a little bit, because I did go through, I've lived here for, like, you know, a little over 2 years now. I've gone through so many different genres, where I've been into this phase, and my music reflects it. I think what happened was just, like, this past spring, I just was listening to a lot of the old bands that I adore, are my favorite bands now, Built to Spill, Modest Mouse. I was listening to a lot of those sort of, you know, guitar-heavy rock bands that come from folk music, ultimately, in my opinion. They have a lot of folk melodies, and they lend from different, you know, American folk tunes. I just went through a sort of an experience where I just realized this is the music I love. This is, you know, I'm glad I explored so many different genres, but this is what I want to create.
You heard Doug Marsh just like picking at that one string.
Yeah, exactly.
And
he's
like, I want that. Yeah, I want all of that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I love his writing.
So what are the plans for the record? Is it done? Is it ready to come out?
It's done. I'm not sure I can, you know, really talk to, you know, I can't really say much at this point just because we're still figuring out the details, the release plans.
Ooh, a mystery.
Yeah, exactly. I would tell you if I knew or if I could or all of that, but
that's totally fine.
It's done, which is
congratulations.
Thank you.
What was that feeling when you? I mean, if for something that's self-produced and self-engineered, how did you know it was done?
That's a good question too. It was that point where I just sort of, I realized there was nothing else I could put on it. You know, I'd listen to those songs like the night of, you know, what I would think would be the finished, or I'd put an instrument on it and I'd listen to it that night, sort of get away from it for a little bit and then listen to it later on. And I kept thinking, you know, if it didn't feel right, I would record another instrument on it. And if not, there just came a point where I didn't want to put anything else. And I just sent it to get mixed and mastered.
You like kicked it out the door.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are, you know, it's never done and then they never put anything out. And some people just rush out the door.
Yeah, exactly.
So some people are like, you know, 67%.
Yeah.
Let's get that. Some people are 100% never put it out. What percentage are you of like, then you're like, okay, this is like, it's never going to be 100%, but it'll, you know, I'm good at this.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm always really like pretty hard on my writing. So I will say this. I'm really proud of it. This is the first thing I've ever done that I'm just 100%. Like, I can't wait to share this with people.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Any shows coming up in the meantime?
Oh, man. Well, this week, but I don't.
You can say it.
It's this Thursday, but.
That's fine.
Okay. All right. Sure. This Thursday, we're doing a showcase at a space. Well, it's on our, you know, ElijahMusic.nyc. If you go there, you'll find all of our information, and there'll be shows.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we want to make sure we have time for one more song. Big thanks to our food guest earlier today. Shout out to my brother, Darren. If you like this episode, please go into iTunes, leave us a comment, give us a rating. And we are going to be back next week with another live episode of Snacky Tunes. What are you going to play for us?
This is a song from the new record.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it named?
Yeah, Everything I Know.
Perfect.
Nope.
Just kidding.
It's called Tell 'Em.
It's called Tell 'Em. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Thank you very
thanks,
much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
One, two, three. Thank you.
for you. We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.